Interruption. And tomorrow we will break it a little bit better. I'm inclined to sometimes forget the time because I'm interested in what I want to share, and perhaps I become too enthusiastic over that and fail to realize that something that I do know very well, and that is that the head takes in only as much as the seat can endure. And I left you enduring too long, so that probably the head was not taking in some of the final statements, which is perfectly all right. Several have asked about these talks. I do hope eventually to complete the book of which these are a part, and eventually it will be published. And so it probably by the time it's published, you will have completely forgotten what was said, and maybe you'll be interested in reading it and coming to it afresh. In any event, what I'm sharing is a book in progress. Several chapters have been completed. Several are yet to be completed, but it will be a kind of psychological commentary on Light on the Path. So I'm not handing out separate chapters at this point, but just to let you know that eventually I hope to have it published, and I think that I have some assurance that it will be published. All I have to do is complete it. So this afternoon I'm sitting over here, and first I think we ought to hear from the groups insights, what ideas, and then we'll open it for the general discussion, additions to, and so on, however the groups wish to. So, Elizabeth, do you want to start?
May I suggest that we do not give reports,
just
share some idea of the group, and then
starting
everybody to join in. Roger, may I ask you to start with that idea of the correspondence between the
wait for the microphone, do.
He will do it.
I have to do this off the top of my head. One of the things we looked into was the correspondences between the various levels of being and the senses referred to, and also whether they were primarily receptive or active. And I think it helps if I look a little at the board to help my thoughts flow. One of the things that we talked about was the fact that eyes can be symbols of light and hence spirit and the masculine side of nature, whereas the eyes are symbols of maybe the female side, the Buddhic side of nature, the content side of the universe. And looking again at the symbols, that there's it's very easy to see that there's a kind of correspondence between the ear and the voice. The ear being used in a receptive sense for listening, and the voice being used to express in terms of vibration and so forth ourselves in the world. But we also talked about that maybe it's possible also that the ear can be used in an active sense inwardly. We all know about active listening in the sense of learning outwardly in our lectures. But if we look at Voice of the Silence, that other great treatise on inner development, then we are told that before the fiery power can make of us a god, to reach our inner nature, then we must hear the inner sound in seven ways. And we came to the conclusion that this was a sort of active process. And it was not just about listening, but a kind of inner growth or inner development. The other sorts of correspondences we looked at was, if there's a correspondence between the ear and the voice, what then is the correspondence between possibly the eye and the feet, if there is such? And one of the possibilities we explored was there is correspondences between the principles of our being, in that they act as like a reflection, so that lower manas is like a corresponds or is a reflection of higher manas. The emotional aspect of our nature is a reflection of the Buddhic aspect, and the physical body, which we believe is represented by the feet, is a reflection of Atma in the sort of theosophical teachings. So these were the sort of correspondences and symbolism we sort of looked into. Well, I think that's probably what I'd like to say for the moment, but that gives an overview, I hope. Yes?
I just fill in one more sentence that we also said the eyes, the ear, and the voice. Perhaps eyes and ear are senses, and if they are turned inside, you have the connection with the Atma, the physical body and the Atma. That is also said in the wisdom books.
Is there anything more from this group that anyone else from this group? We might do it by groups and just give everyone a chance and then open it generally. Anyone else from this group want to add?
We did not do the second question.
No,
all
right.
Shall we start with the first?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Your group, you? Anyone of your group? You or anyone?
Yeah, it's a pity, of course, that we have spoken in Dutch all the time, so... Yes, of course. When there's an Englishman in the group, it's quite easy to make some notes, but I made a few notes in Dutch. And, of course, we came to several ideas Roger mentioned already about the meaning of those words, eyes, ears, and so on. We saw that all these qualities of us have to be renewed, so to say. Because in normal times, our eyes, who are standing in your vision for thinking, have to be renewed, so to say, to have a better understanding of what we are seeing. We have to overcome our feelings to be able to see what is really at hand. And when you say this, just said about two eyes and one ear, we asked also what can be the meaning that they spoke in this little book just about one ear. Somebody said when you have just one ear, you can't say where the noise is coming from. So the noise is everywhere. One person especially knew that because he is deaf on one ear. And it's quite a different thing as when people have two eyes. They have to be able to fix on one point, and that's also the meaning of thinking, to point at a certain subject or so. Voice and feet are not so simple. We had several ideas, but maybe someone can fill it in for me. They're very quiet in that corner at the moment. So we've been thinking of the blood of the heart. It was a very difficult sentence. But at all, we understood it, these are the ideas to be a real pupil in the hall of learning. It's the first hall we see in the Voice of the Silence, and we see before we can go on, we have to go through that hall. And one of the most important things are said here, we have to be rebuilt, so to say. Maybe it has to do with our four lower chakras, to be able to go further. But as you see, we have talked about several things. Maybe we have been thinking about the presence of the masters. All right. Yes, maybe someone else can say something about we've been talking. Where's Jan Jelle? Maybe you have something to fill in? Yes, about the first question, the meaning. Yeah, you...
I would like to say something about the ability of the soul to stand in the presence of the masters. It seemed to me that... I beg your pardon?
Only the first question.
Only the first part.
The eyes, ears, voice, and feet. Let's explore that.
Yes, fully. It has to do with the feet.
Well,
that's
right.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
Good, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you make me forget what other people... I beg your pardon. You make me forget what the other people of my group said about this point, but I still remember my own contribution,
mm-hmm.
And that was like this, that it seemed to me that the ability to stand on your feet in this presence, this forbidden array so far, this ability depends of the possibility to make yourself open for what comes from high. So the blood of the heart streams downwards over the feet, and that seems to mean that the soul makes itself open for above, and by that it can be cleansed, and when it's clean, it can stand in the presence of the masters. Well, that was my contribution. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Jan Jelle, did you say?
I think we had several discussions at the time in the group. We had several discussions at the time in the group, or exchange of ideas, and became the meaning of feet. We asked ourselves, what are the feet of the soul? And then in different languages, the soul has a different meaning. So the feet could be at the level of emotions, or at the level of the higher mind. And one connection was made that in the French language, the cathedrals are built, or churches are built, on a voet. And that's the same word as in Dutch, voet, feet, voet. And so the voet, it's the basis where the whole construction is resting upon, so it's the foundation of the soul. And I think the group thought that the foundation of the soul would be at the level of the higher thinking, the abstract thinking would be the foundations of the soul. So the abstract thinking would have to be treated in a certain way by the heart of the blood, and the idea was that this meant the sacrifice of the probably the lower self, of one had to be able to sacrifice oneself completely before one could start to stand, and to stand that means before one could make the first step on the road of discipleship. Thank you.
Anyone else from that group that wants to add on this first seeing eyes, ear, voice, feet? Well, we'll come to Ivar's group.
It's a bit difficult because we split it up not in those two questions, but in eyes and ears and voice and feet. Because, well, but I'll just mention those things we discussed, which are more about the first question. Most things were already said, by the way. Our feet symbolizes, the feet symbolizes to us our lives, actively going through life, and our feet take us through different experiences. They carry us there. And this also involves the choice of where am I going. About the bleeding heart, we said that it symbolized, at least one of our members, group members said that, and I thought it was very beautiful. Because it is hard to take out that part of yourself that is not good, the heart bleeds, and you walk quite literally in the blood of it because the pain of that goes with you. Yeah, the rest of it is about the masters.
Yes, we separated the eyes and ears to be able to see. I'm just interpreting my point of view. It's to understand or to see something without of and taking the responsibility of what you see. Because sometimes we experience and see things and we didn't want it to, we have seen it. So I think before the eyes can see, they will be not able of tears, so there will be no regret of what you are experiencing and living, and also hearing. So if one says something to me, I have to be able to take it like sitting in the back seat of a car, and so on. Voice and feet. I took it with the second question because in the rest of it, because before the voice can speak, it has not, it may not hurt. As I see it, you tune in up, and you have to. You may not say something bad because it will hit with very strong. It will give a strong impact because you are in a high state. It would hurt even more. So that's why you have to be clear-minded at that state. And so on. Thank you.
It's an interesting point that it hits harder the higher it falls. Yes. Anyone else from that group want to add? Yes. There, Till.
Yes. We were also talking about that the eyes are a kind of windows for the soul. And the eyes symbolize the mirror of the soul. And through the eyes, the expression and wisdom and love from the master radiates out. And when standing on the ground, the feet gets correspondence with the earth through our body. So then we can come on in contact with the wisdom, with the higher self, and through the eyes radiate out, and through the eyes come in touch and contact with the master and the wisdom, so that not the master will reach us through the eyes, but we can through the eyes reach the master.
Interesting.
Yes, and we also talked about when we are looking to a piece of art, a painting or a piece of music, that painting, that art piece also functions as that little window for the soul to come in touch with our inner self and the master. Yeah? Yes. and we also said that one of the ways by means of coming in touch with these things is through ceremonies and rituals, where the ceremonies can, not necessarily will, but can work, function as keys to open the doors, open the little window, so we can come in touch what we are seeking for.
You say.
Maybe somebody remember. Thank you.
Anyone have any further thoughts on eyes, ear, voice, feet? Yeah.
I would like to bring to attention two things in case we might not have said them clear enough. First is about the feet. They're the base, and the base should be cleaned before the soul can be open for what comes from above. And the second is about the eye, about the sentence of the eye with the tears. It's something like this. When you have tears in your eye, the vision is not so clear. You see, it's like this. Thank you.
It's interesting to see what you begin to develop out of this.
Mm-hmm. We also had a discussion about tears, but we actually took not only what it said in Light on the Path, but we compared it with, again, Vice of the Silence, and we came to the conclusion that everything in life, and particularly the spiritual life, is paradoxical, and you have to look at both sides to get a complete view. And with reference to what was said about tears in your lecture and our friend there, we also had another view, looking at Voice of the Silence, and that was there. There's a very beautiful passage where it says that to follow the path, that you cannot take away one single burning tear from your heart until the cause of it is removed. Not only that, it goes on to say that through that process, the very compassion, which is the seed of the bodhisattva, is developed.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that in, because it shows the paradoxical nature of the spiritual text, because in the Voice of the Silence, it's the tears of compassion that water the arid ground of human sorrow. And so their tears are, you know, can we possibly, I'm sorry, come on. But the Voice of the Silence puts it in quite another way to hear this cry and to feel this. So it's interesting to compare the steps. But here it's that the eyes must be incapable of tears. So there is another aspect of the spiritual life is certainly full of paradoxes, isn't it? Yes, Tinka.
I forgot this. We talked about this. It was we talked about the tears and their expression of emotion, and well, it seemed to us that you have to be capable of tears to get beyond the tears, to be able to, without tears, help someone who's suffering. Whereas if you cry for their sorrow when you're trying to help them, you can't help them properly. So you have to know what the sorrow is. You have to be beyond the tears. Not before. You must know what the crying is, but you must, yeah, get beyond it and not need them anymore in order before you can help. That's what we thought.
We spoke firstly about the symbol of the eyes, and then we considered them as the symbol of insight. Now, in this following up eyes, eyes is in plural because it gives a better perspective. And that is, in my view, stronger than when you have two ears and listen exactly where you are, because it's not so much where you are that is interesting, but what comes from the outside, as it were. Now, the ear has a special connection with the voice. They are interconnected. And we questioned whether the eyes had a special connection with the feet. And we thought so. You see, the feet stand for, as it were, for the material side of life, for the earth, and the eyes see objects, also that material side. Now, the feet are being washed, or need to be washed in blood, as it is said. And that refers also to the fact that we have to go through this physical incarnation, and the blood from the heart is expresses the feeling that you have when you see all the suffering in the world. So when you understand, you have got to understand the deeper significance of all the suffering in the world. I think that is more or less another conclusion.
I have been looking in the Bible, and I found something which I thought appropriate. And the Lord said unto me, Son of man, mark well, and behold with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears all that I may say unto thee concerning all the ordinaries of the very small letters. All the ordinances of the house of the Lord, and all the laws thereof, and mark well the entering in of the house, with every going forth of the sanctuary. So you have the eyes, the ears, the doors, and the sanctuary.
We have the voice to listen to and hear the, my words.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hear my words.
Mm-hmm. So the voice is there.
Yeah.
The house itself becomes the feet. It's the
yeah.
It's that which stands is stable. Mm-hmm.
The door,
the gate, of course.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it is all in one. And I remember, but I couldn't find him, that the Lord Christ said when he has given some parable, the one who has ears
to hear, let him hear.
Yes.
And eyes to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are correspondences, corollaries in all the great scriptures of the world. Yes. Anyone else on this? Yes. It's amazing, this opens out, doesn't it? It begins to open out when you really contemplate it.
There were two things. First, we made a little funny remark that ear, hear, and tear, all the three words consist of ear.
Mm-hmm.
Just a funny thing. But after our group session, we continued to talk a little about it. And then we came to talk about the disciple entering the path. Of course, when the disciple, when he enters the path and begin to see the light, the resistance side is not very happy with that. So from the black side of it is, of course, not very happy that there is another disciple entering the path. And we have heard that the dark forces, they can try to imitate the master. And the stronger the dark force is to imitate, the better picture of the master they can produce. The only thing they cannot produce is the love, the radiant love through the eyes. So the disciple get the advice, look at the eyes of the master, and you can define whether it is a master or an imitation of a master.
I will tell a piece of a legend. Prayapati was giving, was teaching, and gave in a few sentences the essence of what the self is. Prayapati. And Indra, the chief of creatures, and also the chief of demons, whose name I forgot, heard him speaking and went to him to ask, explain to us, because we do not understand. And they had to be with him for the next 32 years. And after that, he gave the following lesson. I will not tell the whole story, it's too long. But what he said then was, look, each of you, into the eyes of the other one. And then they went away and they looked, each of them looked into the eyes of the other one. And what did they see? Well, what Prayapati meant was, if you look into the eyes of the other one, you see not yourself. No, you see the self in the other. You forget yourself. You see the eyes, so the eyes stand for the self. Not yourself, but the self. So if you look into the eyes of the other one, you see in the eyes the self. They saw a reflection of themselves, their building. So they went back to Indra and told, yes, we have seen it.
Then he understood what they had seen, and he said, look into a pond with water. What do you not see? And they looked into the pond, and they saw their hair and ears and everything. And they came back and they said, oh, we are very satisfied. We have seen that and that and that. No, we didn't mean, we didn't miss anything. And then both went away. Indra came back because he understood, he had not understood it. But the chief of the demons went away and said, I'm fully satisfied. We only have to revere our own body. So the story goes on. Mm-hmm.
So much in myth and legend. I'm reminded of a story, which is true. Mr. Fritz Kunz, whose name may be familiar to some of you, Fritz was a very good friend of mine, and his widow, Dora Kunz, of course, has been president of the American section. But Fritz, who was one of my teachers in many of these aspects, I must say, was for some years private secretary to Mr. Leadbeater, you may know, as well as doing many other services to the society. And on one occasion, Fritz told us of this occasion when he and Basil Hodgson Smith, who was an English member and also working with Mr. Leadbeater, the two of them were with Mr. Leadbeater somewhere in Italy, and I've forgotten which of the places that they were staying at. And they had an apartment, and Mr. Leadbeater was doing some of his occult work, investigations, and Basil Hodgson Smith and Fritz were making notes and so on. When there came someone at the door, the bell rang, and Fritz went to the door, and there was a very tall, Fritz has described it beautifully, a very tall, imposing looking gentleman, very well dressed, black hair, a black short beard, extremely personable person, asking for Mr. Leadbeater. And so Fritz called CWL to the door and went back to the desk and so on. After a very brief time, he said he could hear Mr. Leadbeater speaking to this stranger, but it was a very brief time. The stranger left, and CWL came back, and CWL said, I'm sure you don't know who that gentleman was. And both Fritz and Basil Hodgson Smith said, no, who was it? And he said, all you needed to do was look into the eyes. He was one of the greatest of the black magicians living now in Europe. And he said, all he had to do was look into the eyes. And he said, you would have seen it. Almost hypnotic. Fritz said the eyes were very strong, very strong. But Mr. Leadbeater was able to deal with him, send him away, and so on. Very interesting. But it was, Fritz said it was something he never forgot because it was such a profound experience and handled very easily. But look into the eyes. Well, anything else on this eyes, ear, voice, feet?
Yes, maybe after thinking over all the things that are said about these four parts of our body, I thought maybe it tells us we have to be masters of our astral plane to be ready to go on, mm-hmm. on our way on the path.
Mm-hmm.
As a
yes, as a totality.
Totality mm-hmm. described in these mm-hmm. first sentences.
That's a very good way of putting it, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I hope this little exercise has opened the fact that to use this little work for meditation, don't pass over any of the sentences lightly. Really ponder them profoundly. What is it? Remember on the title page, for the personal use. So this means there are lessons in every single aspect of this little work. that we can ponder, that we can really study. All right, let's come to the second. The meaning of in the presence of the Master is a beautiful phrase, isn't it? A perfectly beautiful, inspiring phrase. In the presence of the Masters. Used only in the last two. To speak and to stand in the presence of the Masters. So, shall we start over with this group? You had something more, Katinka.
One of the things we said that was that one of the people said that in the presence of the Masters, talking in the presence of the Masters meant to them talking to them mentally and evaluating your day that way. Masters are above conflict, so to be in their company, we have to lose even the tendency to hurt, is what one of us said, and I agree. We cannot be in their company if we are not tuned in to that level of being where it is impossible to hurt. We have to go to that presence. It will only come to us if we are ready, if we elevate ourselves to their level. Some of our group, a lot of what we said was things that I don't personally agree with. We had the group and me for part of this. But luckily, our group already said their piece on this, so I can say mine. They said that through experiences like which happen in the forest or with art or with ceremonies, you get into a state of consciousness which makes you closer to the Masters or even meet them. Well, I thought the Masters would be too busy to come to us when we are enjoying art. But one of the things that was also said was that when you talk to someone and you're trying to help them, but you beforehand you know they're sick and you don't know what to say, but when you are actually there and you do find the words, that might be the presence of the Master. And it then helps to make both the person trying to help and the person who's sick, or in this case he was sick, be happy, and that might be the presence of the Master. I think that's it for now.
Anyone else in that group want to add that? All right. The presence of the Master.
Yes, that was a difficult question, because there's some said before the presence of the Masters. If the soul can stand in the presence of the Masters, it's the full sentence. And I believe it's very important, we spoke about it, what is meant with the soul who is standing in the presence of those Masters? In the first part of the sentence, we have learned we have to overcome a lot of difficulties in our lives before we are able to go ahead. And that affects our soul, I guess. And so only when we have renewed ourselves, so to say, and have been able to change our hearts, our behavior totally, we have the possibility to look for the Masters. We shouldn't think too much of ourselves to be able also to meet the Masters in the position we are mostly. But we have to be able to renew ourselves, that's what I said. I believe that's the most important I can say at this moment. Maybe afterwards something comes in. But it's a very holy thing to go to them and to be able to meet them. Thank you.
Other comments from this group? Ollie?
In my view, the Master's always there. He lives in our hearts. But why are we always closing the door?
This group?
Shall I start?
Yes.
We asked ourselves, why is it that in the presence of the Masters is connected with the voice and with the feet? As it says, before the voice can speak in the presence of the Masters, it must have lost the power to wound. And before the soul can stand in the presence of the Masters, its feet must be washed in the blood of the heart. Let me now go into the voice and in the presence of the Masters. We thought that the voice is very special for human. Eyes and ears. Also, animals have eyes and ears. And, of course, animals also have a voice, but perhaps human beings have most developed voice. We can speak very distinctive and very sensitive, and we can wound with our voice, and we can love with our voice. We also can sing. We can pray. So the voice is, to me, very typical for to us. It was very typical for a human being, and I think by the voice you can see what someone really is. Also with the eyes, we just said that. But I think the voice represents what we really are. And only when we are what we really are, we are in the presence of the Masters. And the presence of the Masters is at, as Ali just said, the Atma in ourselves, the highest spirit in ourselves, and it is just, we are in one line then, at that moment. We stand on our feet in our personality, connected with the highest aspect in ourselves. And the voice can express that on that moment.
I have the feeling that we all are, well, sometimes we say we are seekers for the light, and we are all, every one of us is seeking how to reach, well, it's too much, but I say it, enlightenment. And what are we doing? I think just living and trying and working and do our daily life as well. And from time to time coming together in groups as we are here together. But sometimes in the midst of our life, and we don't expect a voice or something, then I recognize the words from at the feet of the Masters. In the middle of the fight, we hear the whisper of the Master. And I think that the Master is permanently is there, and we are seeking, and from time to time we get some help from outside. From inside, well, there's no outside, there's no inside. We hear the whisper of his, of her voice. I have the feeling that is, those are the points to the place where we want to be.
Other comments?
We didn't really discuss this topic too much because we spent a lot of time on the first question, so I'm really speaking for myself. But I think it helps me at least when we talk about the presence of the masters as referred to in Light on the Path, or the master as referred to, again, Voice of the Silence, if I can compare them, is that there are two aspects to the spiritual contact. One is contact with our own higher self, or the collective higher self. And earlier on there was some humour when someone mentioned that maybe we're in the presence of the masters when we look at great art or listen to great music. Quite possibly that experience is the contact with our own inner nature, that we're more in contact and hence able to experience beauty. So that's the one aspect, the presence with the masters, those progressed, evolved beings, is something else. The two can go together, but I think we need to distinguish between perhaps two experiences. And for me, at least, it helps me in the understanding of the teachings when I'm able to discriminate between the two.
It is such a very beautiful phrase, isn't it, to speak, to stand in the presence of the masters.
On this topic, we had exchange of view on if it was the master in singular or the masters in plural. And then I thought it didn't make a difference. As it is stated in the meditation diagram, you can put your center inside of yourself or the center somewhere outside. If you become conscious that the center is everywhere, it doesn't really matter.
Some of us, I think Ali spoke of the master in ourselves, and in other way of approaching comes forward the idea of the master of wisdom. When you look at the sentences in which comes these words in the presence of the master, the voice must have lost any possibility to wound. If you reach that state, you have lost any feeling of your ego. And as Joy spoke this morning, made a comparison with Jesus, when he also spoke and said, "I'm not speaking, it is the Father which is speaking." Also, in that sentence, every idea of ego is gone, is lost. And you often see that in books and legends, that there is no possibility of coming in the presence of the master unless you have gone through deep suffering, through hell, so to speak, and also through that process have lost any idea of self. And if you have reached that stage, then the two meanings, the master in yourself and the master outside yourself, blend into one another.
In the Mahatma letters, there's a very clear statement that we must go from our world into theirs. It is not bringing them into our world, but our them moving or coming into a condition, as you said, in which that Mahatmic consciousness, that wider consciousness, is recognized. We are in that presence, but it's recognized because we have moved into their world, which is not of literal, but rather in terms of consciousness. But we go with clean hands, with a purity of heart, as Mahatma K.H. wrote to Mr. Sinnott, "I can come nearer to you, but you must draw me by a purified heart and a gradually developing will." It's an interesting statement. Purified heart and a gradually developing will, which is to stand firm, isn't it? So it's the voice and the feet, the understanding that has arisen out of that, all of the pains and difficulties being washed in the blood of the heart. We really have to sacrifice everything, not less than everything. Are there further thoughts you'd want to share? And this whole paragraph,
We had, as a matter of fact, not much time to go into it, but the last part is a very, well, it moved us very much. This statement that the soul can stand, before the soul can stand in the presence of the masters, its feet must be washed in the blood of the heart. And I think what Katinka was telling just now, that you must have wept, you must have had all the tears, you must go through the tears to be able to, well, to have no tears anymore. Perhaps this also is, in this part, you first have to be a personality. If you look at children, they have to develop a personality. Only if you have a personality, you can let it go, you can overcome it. You don't have it, there is no use to overcome it. So it is a question of consciousness, I think. So we have to go through sufferings to be able to go beyond. And perhaps the feet of the soul, that's our, well, all the sufferings of our personality. And we just have to be able to sacrifice it in, only if we have gone through it. But what does it really mean? Did you have time to go into that?
Yes, what does it really mean? We have spent, yes, Dale. Yes. Of course.
There was a thought in my mind. Cahil Gibran said, and this is about the feet, your feet are not only going the path, but you are the path. That is the essence of the feet.
Paul.
In the Mahatma letters, there is a quotation by one of the masters. He quotes St. Paul, and he says, St. Paul literally said, "Don't you know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells within you?" I think that Spirit of God is identical with the Master within, I think. In the Bible, Jesus said, "You can't come to the Father than through me." That means you can't reach the Atma without first reaching Buddhi. That means you need an all-round development. And all the principles of man have to be developed. In the hall of our international headquarters in Adia, there all the religions are being depicted on the wall. There's one on Christianity. And you see there a figure, a majestic figure with a crown on his head and a lantern in his hand. And he stands for a very simple square building. And he knocks at the door. But he can't open the door. And that square building is a symbol of the personality. So I explain it. And that figure which is waiting there, that is our higher self. Waiting until we are willing to listen to the voice of the silence. And of course the secret is that that figure has been waiting there from the very beginning. Already millions of years. Waiting and waiting and waiting until we are prepared. Because the door has to be opened from the personality. And it, just as Joyce said, it can only swing inwards. And there is no way back.
Teo's comment reminded me somehow our feet go forward on the path. They are the path. There's a whole series, I'm sure many of you know, the famous, sometimes they're called the ox herding pictures. There are 10 of them, generally sometimes 12. They're called by different names in the Chinese tradition. But I like the name the ox herding pictures. And there's one where, the ox is lost, and then the search begins for the ox. And finally he catches a glimpse. In one picture he has a glimpse of the tail, as it were, catch hold the tail. And then, I think it's the next picture, he's riding backwards on the ox, and the feet are going in the opposite direction. So there's the clinging to the past. And then he's leading the ox home, and so on. But I think that picture of riding backwards on the ox, sometimes we do ride backwards into the future, so to speak. We're looking at the past as we're moving on. And I was thinking, Paul, what you were saying too, we have spent countless millennia in building a strong center of personality. The whole study of the second volume of Anthropogenesis, for example. We've built a very strong personality, and we have spent centuries, literally, millennia, lives, life after life after life, establishing a center. Because only when there is that strong center can there be that choice that moves beyond, that cracks the shell, that then is ready to move into a new state of freedom, a new stage, which is not a finality. Even the Buddha is said to be, as you know, a sixth rounder.
not a seventh rounder, a sixth rounder. Because according to the Mahatmic teachings, one can progress no more than two rounds ahead of the present. We're said to be in the fourth round. So, when another chain, another planetary chain occurs, there is at a higher level. But we have spent millennia establishing this personality. There's a phrase in the Bible too, something about not, you know, be either hot or cold, the lukewarm I spew out of my mouth, and so on. We're not to be weak, wobbly, sort of amorphous individuals, but out of that center that has been built can come the choice that now a new center must be found, a new center established. Perhaps in the presence of the Masters indicates that there is that consciousness always present in the world, which our small consciousness must break through, and it can only be done from within. The door is only opened from within. The chick, when ready, must peck from within. It doesn't do any good for the hen to peck from without until the peck has started from within. All right? So it comes from within first, and then the breaking of the shell into a new consciousness, into a further consciousness. So we don't know the limits of consciousness. What are the boundaries of consciousness?
I wanted to ask you to Powell's analogy. In your analogy, Powell, you gave an indication that the higher self is there just waiting. But my understanding of theosophy is that with every life, that in us, which is based on the unity of love, on the oneness of love, which comes out of compassion, which is in line with the law of love, that part of that experience is taken and added, as it were, to our higher self, so that there comes a point in our series of incarnations where that pull from within is of such a strength that it's able to influence our own personality so that we can make that choice. And so one of the things that the Mahatmas talk about is they say, they compare two people, Mr. Sinnett and Mr. Hume, and they say of Mr. Sinnett that his outer self is vastly inferior to his inner self. But Mr. Hume, who is very much the strong personality, the man in the world, that his outer self is vastly superior to his inner self. And for me, the only way I can understand it is that Mr. Sinnett has, through his incarnations, through his effort towards or living a life which is in line with the unity of life, he has added to his inner self, whereas Mr. Hume has, if you like, weakened that link and added to his outer self. That's only my perception. I'd be interested to see what other people think.
It's interesting. Paul, you want to comment?
In one of the last letters to Sinnett, there is a moving page because Mr. Sinnett was complaining that he did not saw much progress in his life. He had not developed clairvoyance and clairaudience. So he was complaining a little bit to the master. And then the master reassures him. He says, don't worry, because all these outer signs, they are not important. But inwardly, you have developed. And don't worry about this. It's a beautiful sentence.
It's a beautiful pair, yes, it is.
And about that waiting figure, on which I spoke there in the hall of Adyar, that figure is knocking at the door, but he is only knocking. So, and you know, of course, the famous sentence in the Bible, don't throw your pearls for the swine, because they will trample on you. So one has to be careful. And with these things.
Yes. And, again, many interpretations can be, but I think it's the pondering, it's the coming into that center where we can really try to ponder what is being said to us. How can we make use of this? If this work is for the personal use of those who are really desirous of coming within the influence of the wisdom, how do we use it in our daily lives? How do we really use every experience to enable us to stand firm, to have confidence? How do we use every experience to learn to speak in such a way that the voice is indeed has the power to help, that it is that healing through the voice? The statement I read from the Secret Doctrine this morning, that the voice, every word, as every name, gives us our fate. It's amazing. Now, what does this mean? Why is that, again I come back, why is the essay on karma always part of Light on the Path? Every word, which means the intonation, the connotation, and even in silence we speak, I said, silence itself. The voice of the silence in the second part, life itself has speech and is never silent. What is this? So I think out of this very initial paragraph there is much to contemplate for a long time to come, isn't there? Much to explore, much to try to understand, if we can. Anyone else like to share? Or we can sit for... Yes, Elizabeth?
May I share one
yes, thing? Yes.
I'm thinking about the Om, and there is said that singing the Om, you connect all the levels of your being, from the physical level to the very highest level. Perhaps the voice is so important, as you quoted just now, because in our voice we also reflect or express all the levels of our being, so we really can express by our voice what we are. Perhaps that is a key.
That may be a key, yes. And when your name is called, have you ever considered, when your name is called, what in you responds?
Mm-hmm. Because you hear in the intonation whether it's a friendly call or a hostile call or there's a given message call.
That's right.
But that makes you already respond.
But what is it in you? What is who responds?
Yeah.
Who responds? The name is powerful. Every name carries a power. I'm not going to answer. I'm just asking you. But it's interesting to consider, isn't it? And you say, well, that's just an outer label. It doesn't mean anything. Not according to HPB.
Which part of you is responding?
So which part of you is responding? People change their names. It's interesting. Consider the name. And there comes a time when this is one of the skandhas, of course, Namarupa, name and form. But name is also something very important. So I just throw this out. In the growth of the child, yes. See this. That's what Ali said, yes. Yes, whether it's a friendly call.
Also, the eyes of the person who is calling you and is looking at you has all connections together.
It does. Well, perhaps we can sit for a moment in silence and just inwardly contemplate this paragraph. The eyes that must be made incapable of tears. The ear must lose its sensitivity. The voice must lose any power to wound, any power to hurt. The soul to stand, because its feet have been washed in the blood of the heart. Martha, you want to say anything about this evening?
Yes, we will have a walk through the wood tonight. And I beg your pardon? We will have a walk through the wood tonight. And, well, who wants to join me? They can come to the St. Michael's house. And we leave at 8 o'clock from the front door. So I hope it will still beautiful weather. Put on your walking shoes and see each other at 8 o'clock. Outside, this is a park. We don't stay on the compound, no. We are going outside, yes.